The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
It is the Saturday night victory horns, everybody, and they sound for Edson Barboza. And early in that main event, inside the world's most famous Apex, a lot of people didn't think that would be the case, because Sadiq Youssef came out like a house on fire. 10-8 Edson Barboza, looked like Edson was close to being out of there, but the wily veteran, the strength of schedule, the veteran experience comes through in a big way. He wins the next four rounds, even nearly finishes Sadiq Youssef in round three, and just a pretty crazy main event of UFC Vegas 81. And thank you for joining us as we recap this here. I am Mike Heck, and joining me, and this might be a historical day for the MMA Fighting YouTube channel and podcast networks. Have we had anybody do two post-fight shows in one day? I think I might have done it once, but I don't even know if that's true, Jed Meshew.
I'm built different. Built different, Mike Heck. And you know what else is built different? Our viewership numbers. Because I got to tell you, Misfits had a lot more people turn into our YouTube. But all 167 of you, I see you and I love you. Thank you for being here. I'm excited to talk about this this fight. You know, this event. There were some dope things that happened on this event. The main event being one of them. And then some other stuff that were cool. So good to talk about, you know, MMA instead of influencer weirdness.
I'm so glad. Plus, I get on that.
I get two victory horns, Mike. I get two victory horns in my life.
I mean, did we use the same music for the Misfit show? Because there sure was did. No, there shouldn't have been any music leading into that.
Tommy Fury show. Won. Tommy Fury got that W, unanimous decision, Tom Fury.
Yeah, but nobody won. Like, nobody won who watched it. Nobody won who spent the money. If you watched this main event between Edson Barboza and Sadiq Youssef, I think you felt like you won something. And heading into the festivities, Jed, I was like, this Misfits card is going to be, like, super weird and kind of probably not good. And then the UFC card, even though it's, like, not the most stacked lineup of all time, it's almost going to be a card that, like, we're so glad is on because we need a palate cleanse. We need to feel better about ourselves. We need a combat sports visual shower after dealing with the Misfits card. I kind of feel like this fight card delivered that palate cleanse, like, at the perfect time for us, did it not? It wasn't the best card ever, but we got professional fist fights at least for that main card, which is when the Misfits card ended, and I was very happy about that.
Well, by the time I was done with the Misfits card, we were just getting into Arujo Maya. So, you know, ooh, that yeah, we could have timed it a little bit better. Was it the best place to start being fully devoted to the mixed martial arts? But look, this fight card was pretty much what I thought it was. I think coming into it, we didn't honestly even talk about it on BTL, but like other, you know, when we talked about it on Damn this week, it was like, this fight card isn't great, but there are some fun matchups, some live underdogs, some good things can happen. And we got that. It's a pretty standard issue Apex card at this point. Not going to blow your socks off, but if you spent your evening watching this, you're probably not too upset. And I will push back on the, like, we talked about it on the Misfits post show. It wasn't a bad event. Like, was it worth your money? I don't know. That's up to you and how interested you are in those things. But it was roughly a good time. The people there at that event seemed to have a wonderful time. But you still had to pay for that. This fight night was free, so, or, you know, cost the price of an ESPN Plus subscription. So I think if you left, you know, you had nothing else going on this Saturday night and you watch this, you're feeling okay about your choices, because the main event was very, very good, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think, like, top to bottom, Misfits wasn't bad. Like, the Dean LeGrade fight was probably the best fight of the whole weekend. That fight was insane. That was really good. Right. But just we were left with such a bad taste in our mouths at the end, because the last two fights were friggin' awful. But
it was not. I knew that those fights were stupid, but they were at least funny. But the co-main event was undeniably awful, but funny. The co-main event was quite funny. It was stupid and awful, but it was funny. The main event was terrible, but it was also funny at the end to hear them talk like petulant little children. It was pretty amusing as well.
Yeah, KSI's reaction was great, but we're not here to talk about that. A main event that did.
We already did it. Go to the thumbnail next to this one. You can see what we talked about in the post show if you're into the Misfits.
Well, let's talk about real fighting, real professional fighting, fighting the way it's supposed to be done in an empty arena. Edson Barboza, Sadiq Youssef. This is a very interesting fight at 145 pounds. We hadn't seen Sadiq Youssef in over a year. Edson Barboza, kind of been up and down. He's fought literally the who's who at 155 and 145 over the last 9 years. We ran off the list in the People's Pre-Fight Show. It's just ridiculous to even look at it. But Sadiq Youssef, man, comes out and just overwhelms Edson Barboza. Like, Edson's trying to get something going, but Youssef is landing, and it's like cartoon style, where every punch he lands, Barboza's face is swelling up, a new cut is busted open, he's getting wobbled with every shot, gets dropped, looks like Youssef's going to get him out of there. He can't. Barboza gets the final horn, and I don't give Herb Dean a lot of credit, Jed. I don't really give Herb Dean a lot of credit. I've aptly nicknamed him Hokey Pokey Herb. I think he deserves that nickname. I got to say, I think he did a great job in this fight. He let Barboza survive in the third round when Barboza almost kicked Sadiq Youssef's head into the third row. He let Sadiq Youssef battle back and stay in the fight. He did a fantastic job. But in the end, Edson Barboza, the grizzled vet, gets it done. Your thoughts on Barboza's performance, especially after how that first round went?
I mean, it was just that's exactly what you hope to see from a guy like Edson Barboza, right? Like, that is a classy veteran effort right there, because he had the wood put to him in round one. And it was all the ways that he traditionally does. Like, Youssef just got in his grill and made him eat. Like, it's like, here, take it. And Barboza stayed thing. Wasn't a huge fan of him, like, trying to roll on those heel hooks off the bottom, just because I thought that actually opened him up to more offense. But he ultimately made it out of the round, recomposed himself, came out in the second round, and turned the tide of the fight. I think they knew that that could happen. Sadiq Youssef has tended to be a pretty fast starter in his career. And certainly hearing him talk about at the end, the body work being such a big part of his game plan. And I think that paid huge dividends. I think that is, if that's what they kind of envisioned, they nailed it. And it was really, really smart from them, because after that second round, that fight was pretty one-way traffic for Edson Barboza. I mean, Youssef wasn't out of the fight, but once the body work had time to accumulate, and, you know, they said during the fight that, like, by the middle of round three, Barboza had landed 46 strikes to the body or whatever. Like, that is just a brutal thing. And it showed. Youssef, you know, his corner was out there telling him, hey, stoic face, like, pretend this doesn't suck as much as it does. Try and jab, move forward. And and Barbosa had kind of taken that away. And I was doing the live blog and I wrote in the fifth round, maybe it was in the fourth round, it was one of those two rounds, Barbosa is really running out of ideas. He's run out of ideas and he's run out of safe spaces, because early in the fight, he had the clinch. He could get in there and got that takedown. By the middle of the fight, Barbosa was winning the clinch exchanges. Yusuf was trying to jab, but he was getting slipped and countered a lot. Like, that's just, that is the textbook definition of a veteran performance, overcoming a bad start and just craft and guile and working your way back into the fight and then taking over down the stretch.
So I'm looking at the scorecards right now, because I had scored it four rounds. Someone on Twitter was like, how could you possibly score the fight the way you did? Because I scored it 48-45 for Edson Barbosa, which still
that's the official MMA fighting scorecard, by the way.
Yeah, four rounds to one, a 10-8 for each guy. That's how it all works out. Here's what the cards look like. All three judges gave four rounds to Edson Barbosa. They all gave him 2, 3, 4, and 5. Two of the judges, Derek Cleary, Sal D'Amato, gave Sadiq Yusuf 10-8 in the first round. Good old Chris Lee. I mean, what do you – does Sadiq Yusuf need to hit Edson Barbosa with a fucking baseball bat to get a 10-8 round? Like, what else does this guy need to do to get a 10-8 round? That was about as textbook of a 10-8 as you can get. Gives him a 10-9. Round two, I thought Barbosa definitely swung it at the tail end of the second round. He started going to the body. Round three, Jed, not one judge gave Edson Barbosa a 10-8 after the spinning wheel kick almost knocked – Dana White almost held Sadiq Yusuf's head on his lap. That wheel kick was nasty. That was so close to getting stopped. And not one judge gave it a 10-8. Are you surprised by this? That not one judge gave him a 10-8 third?
I'm really surprised by it. That's just objectively stupid. Honestly, it's not even objectively stupid. It's objectively incorrect. There is... And I, the longer we have done this, the more we have kind of gotten to this, the more fights I have attended. I do understand that the live experience is very different than the view you get at home. It's substantially worse in most occasions, actually. And I can understand where some rounds look closer or others. And I can understand how a lot of scores are different. There is no view in the house at home, on Mars, in alternate dimensions, in which you could watch that and not, according to the rules, say that it has to be a 10-8. Like, legitimately, I think that that is one of the most egregious scorecards of the year. And I know that there are other contenders. We had the whole hubbub about the 10-8 in Agraso-Shevchenko. I'm more willing to acknowledge that than I am this being a 10-9. Fortunately, it ultimately doesn't matter. The outcome of the fight would not have changed. But it's, I think that there's a pretty good argument that that's the worst scorecard of the year.
It's pretty bad. Shaheen Al-Shadi, the wise wordsmith himself, tweeted out exactly what my thoughts were when this fight was over. And we talked about this a lot on the preview show, and I think it's important. So I'm going to read this tweet verbatim. 2 weeks in a row, the old guard is served up as a stepping stone for a younger contender. 2 weeks in a row, the old guard sends that youngster home unhappy. Incredible comeback tonight by Edson Barbosa. That was awesome. So great win for Edson Barbosa. I think this is probably the least interesting result for the division, because as much as we love Edson Barbosa and as much as this is a cool thing to watch him go in there and get a win like this, I don't think we come out of this being like, wow, you know what? Edson Barbosa can go on a title run right now. I don't think we're going to get that far. Sadiq Yusuf, however, if he goes out there and the roles are reversed here and he wins a 4-1 decision or gets the finish, then we could start thinking of more interesting things here. What can we do with Sadiq? Can he get back in there? His one shot before was on an Allen. He lost that fight, but he bounces back, gets a big name, gets a main event spot and wins. That didn't happen here. So Edson Barbosa is probably going to be kind of where he's at, just going to fight good dudes, trying to make it to that next level. But where does Sadiq Yusuf go now, Jed? For a long time, we've just been waiting for this guy to break out, and now he's gotten two opportunities against two pretty high-ranked guys, and he's fallen short in both of them. Where does he go from here?
Mike, before I answer that, I would like to make my formal Otno suggestion here live on air for your wonderful show tomorrow. Okay. It's time, Mike. It's time we do it. let's just, the violence gods need blood. They need blood. They demand it. And Calvin Kattar's got to be close to coming back, right? Like, he's got to be in the neighborhood of coming back. Just do that. Let's do that for my man Edson.
I feel like Edson's going to be sitting out for a hot minute after the dude. He may have won the fight, but if he should.
I don't know if he will. Like, also, this is who Edson is now. He just kind of takes a beating. And what would be more fun than watching him and Calvin Kattar beat the souls out of each other? That's the matchup I would like to see. That is my submission on to the next one. As for Sadiq Yusuf, it's a really tough loss. Like, he's relatively young. I think he's 30. Maybe he's still 29. And that's good. But he's had a really weird career, right? Like, he's was on a two-fight win streak coming into this, but that last one was, you know, nothing to write home about. I mean, it was a great win, but does anyone care about Don Chaney as far as like the top of the sport goes? Alex Caceres, that win still aged pretty well as Caceres keeps kind of staying relevant and evolving. But I mean, functionally at this point, Sadiq Yusuf has now twice gotten a chance against a sort of higher end guy and twice fallen short in competitive fights, but he's going to have to fight backwards. He's going to drop in the UFC's rankings. I don't know if he's in our rankings or if he's a Favre. I think I had him like at 15, but he's probably going to lose whatever spot if he has one in our rankings. And he's just going to have to fight backwards. And he said it in his post-fight interview, you know, it was a tough loss, but I could have done some things different, but I'll come back from this. And I think that a lot of that is true because he did show some stuff, but I got a ton of respect for Edson Barbosa, but if you want to be a guy who's making a real run in this weight class, you can't be losing this iteration of Edson Barbosa. And again, I love Edson Barbosa. I picked him to win this fight. I picked him to beat Billy Q, but I think Billy Q is a fun action fighter, fringe top 20-ish guy, and that's kind of where he caps out. And I think that probably means something similar for Sadiq Yusuf here. Good fighter, but, you know, Giga Chikadze, Bryce Mitchell, those dudes won this fight and are now, they are dudes in this weight class. And Sadiq Yusuf caught a worse Edson Barbosa, even more worn, and couldn't do it. And I don't know where he goes from here other than to keep picking up wins and try and put something together. But I have a lot of doubts that he's ever going to really make a run towards the top 10 and sort of a highly competitive possible title challenger role in this weight class.
Yeah, the stakes are definitely higher for Sadiq Yusuf in this fight. No doubt about it. I think it kind of closes the door on title contention for him. Not saying he can't have a long and successful career in the UFC, but featherweight's
gonna
not
be
where
like
bantamweight
Danny
is.
He's just going to be like Danny Ige. Maybe. He's going to hang around the top 15-ish. Maybe a little worse than Danny Ige, though he still has time to develop. But like, he's never going to get close to a title shot. And I think that is what this loss was, and that's tough.
Yeah,
you know,
we do have bonuses. No surprise. Ooh, here
let's play the guessing game.
We'll play the guessing game. There is a fight, obviously there's a fight of the night, so we're not gonna pick.
I'm gonna
that.
Say
we're
not gonna event. I'm gonna go ahead and say the main event is the fight of the night,
although I will say the Melissa Dixon Arena Alex Eva fight was really fun. They beat their
try to tell y'all about Melissa Dixon. Yeah, they got screwed. They didn't get screwed because they don't deserve to win it over Barbosa Yusuf. That fight is better and more interesting. But like, they had a hand on that check. They were both kind of holding it, and then it got yoinked right out of there like a cartoon from them. So tough.
You know
what's those women.
You know what's unfortunate? If Yusuf and Barbosa didn't do what they just did, I don't think there would have been a fight of the night. I think they would have done the whole four performance bonus thing. But they didn't do that. I think they would have. Who do you think got performance bonuses? They only gave out two, Jed.
I would bet my soul that Michelle Beheada got one.
Yes.
Okay, I was about to say, please tell me I didn't just lose my soul on a stupid bet, but I would have been shocked if Michelle Beheada and his 12-second knockout up a weight class didn't earn him that.
Minute six. There are Terrence a bunch McKinney of finishes knocked, on this card.
Yeah, but Terrence McKinney also knocked a dude out in like 4 seconds, so I'm assuming he got the other.
He did not.
Give it to? I mean, if you're going, I know this is a Casey stand. Like, Casey loves to say this, and I like fundamentally agree with it. If you're going by performance, Jonathan Martinez deserves a performance bonus, but I feel like he wouldn't get one. Did he?
Did get
good
one.
For them. Yep. That is. Well, they usually do them like
they got it right.
Epic one-shot KOs or whatever, not I'm going to break this man's leg off. But, I mean, he deserves it. That is arguably the most impressive performance of the evening, even including the main event.
Yeah, 100%. Look, I know Terrence Kinney won in 20 seconds, and I have a lot of respect for Brendan Marat. I like the guy a lot. Fellow New Englander. Respect him. But we knew how this fight was going to go. We knew that Terrence is probably going to finish him in the first round. Terrence, by the time they fought, was probably like a minus 600 favorite. I don't even know if that's true, but no one expected this fight. No one expected Terrence McKinney to lose this fight, nor even struggle, nor even get out of the first round. And Terrence landed one big knee, gets him out of there. It's the way the fight was supposed to go. But man, what Jonathan Martinez did tonight was incredibly impressive because
the NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Viviana Yarrujo, gutsy performance. I thought Jennifer Maia won that fight, but I'm not arguing it at all. It was what it was. Jennifer Maia, some pretty bad fight IQ in the third round. I think if she just kind of kept hitting her against the fence, she wins the fight. But she didn't do maybe. That, and she lost. Maybe she lost the first round, too. I don't know. Weird fight. Wasn't great. Good bounce back for Araujo, but Jonathan Martinez, the silence behind the violence, Jed Meshew. This was the fight. This is low-key banger central. This is the one everybody had their eye on that wasn't a main event or wasn't a circus fight. We have Jonathan Martinez in a five-fight win streak, just beating Nurmagomedov in a fight that a lot of people, if we go through MMA decisions, thought Nurmi won. Martinez fights Adrian Yanez, who's looked great in the UFC. Has his first octagon setback against Rob Font, a man who at one time you believed was the best bantamweight in the world.
Thought we can't know if I was right or wrong.
Now we don't know. Now we don't
we
know.
We can't know. He may have been in that very specific window.
Yes. And Jonathan Martinez just beat the brakes off Adrian Yanez. Those leg kicks were nasty.
Wasn't particularly competitive.
Yeah, it was surprising. It really was. Like, I'm not surprised Jonathan won, but the fact that Adrian mounted like almost no effective offense in the entirety of that fight is crazy. Like, Adrian obviously landed punches, but Jonathan just
defense looked fantastic too.
He's just like, getting better and better and better. He's scary, man.
He is the guy who opened my eyes the most on this card, because like I said coming into this. That he's been fine, but hasn't been like wildly impressive to me. Just because of what his wins were. Cub Swanson's well past his prime. Alejandro Perez is like a decent enough win or whatever. And Saeed Nurmagomedov also, the worst Nurmagomedov, like still a fine fighter, but that's, you know, that it just, none of it had shocked me. And we talked about a no bets part. I still have the Davy Grant bad taste in my mouth from that performance, but it's the best he's ever looked tonight. He looked really, really, really good in there in all facets of it. And dude's a legit problem at 135.
Calls out Marab. Love it. Not going to get it, but I love it.
Never going to happen. Never going to happen.
I actually thought that was a really smart call out. He's not going to get it.
Like, got to call it like Umar.
That's not a bad call out. That actually probably would be better.
Everyone should call out Umar because you might get it because nobody will fight that dude. So, like, you might get it by virtue of no one else will take it.
The pettiness of the UFC as it involves Marab Dwelish, really, it'd be kind of hilarious if Marab is just like, I want this title shot, I deserve it, and everybody knows it. And they're like, hey, you're going to fight a 3-round main card opener at the Apex against Jonathan Martinez. Oh, God, that'd be so crazy. But what a just outstanding. The silence behind the violence just getting better. You could see he's getting more confident. The personality starting to shine. He spoke like 38 words in his post-fight interview with Michael Bisping. What a night. What a night for TSB TV. Well done.
Yeah, I'll watch him fight anybody at this point. I'm just looking at the bantamweight and like, he's going to get an opportunity now. And I just don't know who it's going to come against, but they're all awesome.
I got a name in mind.
Pedro Munoz doing.
That's not a bad one.
Pedro can defend leg kicks.
Yeah. That's not a bad one. Could be. Maybe that's Otno pick number two. He just beat Chris Gutierrez. Jonathan could try to exact a little revenge for his teammate. Lots of leg kickers tonight. Lots of bantamweight
leg kickers.
Factory X from the same gym. One thing we talked about in No Bets Barred is the middleweight division.
I can't believe we didn't do a Factory X parlay. Like the bantamweight leg kick parlay. That is such a lot. Like that's what a fail. That's on me. I'm good with the gimmicks and I just missed it. Hand up.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it to you. It's definitely on you.
It's on me.
Michelle Pereira. Middleweight Michelle Pereira, Jen Meshew. We thought him moving up to 185, while he could still have some of that chaos that we all fell in love with, we felt like he's kind of a tamer version, that if he had moved up like 2 years ago, maybe he would be the undisputed middleweight champion. We thought that was a very strong possibility here, that Michelle Pereira at his age, after putting his body through so many weight cuts to 170 and just that style just not being as chaotic as it once was, maybe he's the new middleweight contender. Nope, not at all. He just ethers Andre Petroski in 68 seconds. He should have made this move forever ago. What the hell is he waiting for? Middleweight Michelle Pereira, how excited are you about this, considering how fun this division has gotten this year?
This is what I always wanted for my large adult son. and that's who Michelle Pereira is. Me and AK Lee were on the Pereira train for ages and ages because of all his ridiculous like regional highlights. And you would just see it pop up. You know, Kaposa would be like, hey, here's Michelle Pereira in arena fighting challenge or whatever, doing a backflip onto some guy. And it's just like, this guy's insane and it's awesome. And he gets to the UFC and he does that for a couple of fights and he gasses out because he's cutting a billion pounds of weight and that doesn't work out very well for him. And then he stops and he like reinvents his style and he's no longer bringing the craziness. And it's like, well, now this is just sad. What could have been? But if he can do this at middleweight where he can feel a little more free to express himself because he's not cutting a billion pounds of weight and he can have a little bit more confidence in his cardio and he can do super violent stuff, but also be a little bit more reserved, not get like totally out over his skis. That would be the perfect end point for him. So I am hopeful that with a terrific start here, we'll get to see him try and do like some backflip guard passes on the Nasruddin Imavovs of the world, you know?
Just like some of the matchups we could get with him in this division, pretty fun. Some pretty fun matchups. Like there's eventually going to be a world we live in where him and Paul Craig fight each other. And I don't know if there's anything I want more in the world than seeing those two guys fight each other.
When you say there's a world, that world's now. Just book that fight. Do that.
But Paul Craig's about to fight for the middleweight title in a main event.
Oh, who's he fighting?
Brendan Allen, November 18th.
You probably can't put Pettis against the winner of that. Put him against the loser of that fight and hope it's Paul Craig.
Nah, the loser That'd of the fight fights Joe Pyfer. Joe Pyfer fights the loser of that fight.
That's we're not here for that. That's mean.
Fair enough.
That's just mean to those poor souls.
Christian Rodriguez needs to get the weight stuff under control. I really think that the 4 pounds
looked really good. This
fight. He looked good. No, the fight was awesome. It was
probably
a great fight.
Probably made a difference. It looked great.
He cuts those last 4 pounds. It might be a difference. Cameron might win that fight, but it was super close. I thought all three rounds are incredibly close. Right guy won for sure. I have no issue with 30-27s. Great fight. Good performance. Christian Rodriguez got a lot of skill. He saw, but he's got to get this weight thing under control. He can't miss weight again. Like, these are bad. These are big misses.
I mean,
25% of the purse. Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because it doesn't come out of his win purse.
It's 25% of the purse, but he's getting that extra purse for the dubs. So,
exactly.
I mean, when you think about it, that's just a business transaction for him. If he keeps coming in at 140 fighting dudes at 135, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for him. That's a good deal.
Always cheat. Darren Elkins doing Darren Elkinsy things. Submits TJ Brown with just the bloodiest face you'll ever see.
Man, it was a tough day to be a young pup trying to take out an old dude, huh?
Yes. Tainara Lisboa gets the win, capping off a parlay for me, which I was very happy about. Terrence McKinney, 20-second knockout.
I told you, Terrence McKinney TKO round one was just like, I don't even care what the odds were. I ended up getting it plus money. It was terrific.
Yeah, I ended up pulling the trigger on just
17 of 21 fights have ended in the first round.
17. I got him by KO minus 105. So I was at least happy about that. Fine. And obviously that helped one of my other parlays because under 2.5 was about the biggest no-brainer, or under 1.5 is like biggest no-brainer of all time. I almost cashed Melissa Dixon, Irina Alexeva under 2.5. I felt so good about that. And I was going to kind of brag about that pick. And for some reason, like, these women just didn't get finished, even though there are multiple chances for that fight to be stopped. It just didn't happen, but great fight. Those two beat the hell out of each other. Really enjoyed it. Chris Gutierrez, just a workman-like win against Alatang Haley. Speaking of, like, Alatang Haley looked like he had an alien about to come out of his leg. Those are just some nasty leg kicks. Alatang Haley, super tough. And then, and maybe the easiest pick of the entire card in terms of who would win and how, Emily Ducote beats Ashley Yoder by unanimous decision. Ducote gets it done, 13-8. Ashley Yoder now in her record is 8-9 as a professional mixed martial artist. So there you go. That's UFC Vegas 81.
Yep. now y'all know about my girl, Melissa Dixon, who I ranked in the UFC, in the MMA fighting women's bantamweight rankings like a year and a half ago. And everyone was like, who the hell is that? And I was like, I don't know. She's 6-0 in Aries. And she just beat the other woman I had ranked. So we're good. This is great. And also shout out to Spencer Kite, who before that fight described Irina Alexeva as a bag of feral cats, which made me laugh a lot. So, yeah, that's all I got to say on this undercard.
Yes, we're going to take some questions. By the way, if you thought, like, in the midst of all of this craziness going on with Misfits and stuff, there's another fight that people seem to care about. That's about to happen in a little while. I'm watching this card. This is Caged Aggression, Bad Blood. I'm watching it.
Why do we keep putting old dudes in this cage, Mike? Because I'm watching it too. And this man,
he's got to be 57.
He is 1,000% in his 50s, about to fight a fit
that's like
young
a 40.
Man.
Oh, dude, he look.
This young dude he is about to fight is quite fit, and this dude is like a softish man with an almost fully gray beard. I am not exaggerating. That beard is almost fully gray. Ain't like a silver fox in this. It's like he's one step away from Golden Bachelor. Like, I don't know what the hell is going on.
If you watch those old Just for Men commercials in like the late 90s,
he is the before.
He's the before. This guy is the before. So maybe he'll go out there and just ice him. I don't know. But yes, Pat Miletich.
And the young kid, freaking Imanari, rolls to start the fight. He is 30 years younger than this man, and he just fires off an Imanari roll from across the cage that comes nowhere near getting it. What a hero this young man is, my new favorite fighter. He didn't want to hurt the old man. Tried to Imanari him. Just roll up onto a leg. And now he immediately takes it back as soon as he starts fighting.
Dude, this fight's over. It's got to be over. Oh, flatten him out. Yep, he hasn't even thrown a punch. No, don't punch
him.
What
is happening?
This is awful.
What? Who sanctioned this?
I have to turn it off.
Casey, do you have the link? Are you watching this too? Oh, it's you're on mute, Casey. But yeah, this is, it's about to be over. He's attacking a choke, but I'm not even kidding. This man's beard is almost entirely gray. He's tapping out. And like, look, he's looked really fit for a 55-year-old guy. And like, credit to him. I hope I'm that fit when I'm 55, but like, that is legitimately dangerous and probably criminal matchmaking in a reasonable world.
Jesus. But he defended the Imanari roll, though. He stopped the leg.
Well, because the Imanari roll didn't
actually make contact. He shot it from so far out that the guy just kind of looked at him on the mat.
The referee said fight, and he slid to the ground.
It honestly looked like it might have been his first time ever trying to Imanari roll somebody.
Oh my god. All right, we'll take a couple questions.
All right, yes, sure.
I'm so oddly intrigued by Pat Miletich, Mike Jackson, and I don't know why.
Old man might win though.
He probably will. Patty boy might win this fight.
All right. First question from Mr. Joseph Boza.
Should round one have been a 10-7 Sadiq, or is Bisping just full of it? So I'll let you talk about this, Jed, because I believe the official MMA fighting score was different than the score you submitted MMA decisions. Is that accurate?
That is correct. I did that twice tonight. So officially we scored that a 10-8 in MMA fighting, mainly because I think that is, I largely try to score those how I think the judges are going to, mixed in with sort of what I think, but I also recognize that I have much more liberal interpretations on some of these rules. And so I don't kind of push those out in my scoring. I think that round should be a 10-7 pretty clearly to me. I was actually pretty pro what Bisping was saying there, and that round was a pillar to post ass kicking. At no point in that round did Edson Barboza produce meaningful offense. He was spent 5 minutes getting clubbed, nearly got finished on a couple of occasions. And I don't know what the stats were, but it had to have been like 80-2 or whatever. Like, that's, to me, that fight is about as clear of a 10-7 that can be offered. If you believe that 10-7 should exist outside of referee error, because there's a subset of people that interpret those rules as saying 10-7 should only happen when the ref screwed up and didn't stop the fight and should have. And that is a credible way to read the rules, honestly. To me, I think that 10-7s can exist absent referee error. And that to me was a clear 10-7 because, like, I believe Edson Barboza, on the next stage of this, I gave Edson Barboza, both officially on our scorecards, a 10-8 for round three. I do not believe rounds one and round three were the same level of round. Like, to me, round one was clearly a more dominant, more damaging round than round three, and thus should warrant earning more for that. So I think 10-7 is actually the correct score. But I also recognize that I have much more liberal interpretation on some of these scorings.
Yeah. For me, I had no issue giving it a 10-7. And basically, for me, anything can be a 10-7 when we're watching a fight. And if the ref would have stopped it, we would have gone, okay. And I thought that if the ref would have stopped it that first round, there wouldn't be a big hoopla. Like, that was a horrible stoppage. It would be like, sucks Barboza couldn't work his way out. And we have a completely different storyline tonight. But, yep. Yeah. I have no, like, if was it Herb Dean tonight in the main
event? Yeah.
Actually, yeah, I thought Herb, he did quite well tonight. Herb's been doing pretty good lately.
I think you heard some of the criticism. I think you heard some of the criticism and set this game up a bit. I'm just saying.
But he's the most improved referee, like in the back half of the year. He's the most improved referee in my eyes.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I can remember him doing something. I'm like, that's just bad, dude. Like, he's really had a good year.
Yeah. No issues. Were fans upset about the whole suggesting it's a 10-7 or?
No, I don't think so. They shouldn't.
Well, it just seemed like Dominic Cruz was pushing back, and then that kind of became that because Bisping, you know, and Cruz were having their sort of tiff in there. I don't even want to harp on the commentators for not having this because, like, they should, but whatever. Like, at this point, just get the same way that any other professional sports broadcast has, like, a former rules official or whatever to loop in and be like, hey, let's talk to you, Pat, about what's the call here on this instant replay. You just bring them in and be like, hey, Bisping and Cruz are talking about that round and should it be a 10-7? Let's loop in. I mean, obviously this won't happen because Big John doesn't work with them, but, like, let's go to Big John in the booth. John, you know,
Frank Trigg in there.
Yeah. Chris Lieben's judges should be like, Chris, tell us your perspective. Like, do you could do this in a better way than they are fumbling through this consistently?
Didn't Ratner used to do that for a little bit for the UFC broadcast? And then when they bring
vaguely
out Ratner,
seems familiar.
Yeah. But it was yeah. I wish. Okay. Cool.
That's what they should do though. 100%.
Yeah.
Another Joseph posed a question. Should Christian is the rest of the question just terrible? Is that what it is?
Oh,
we got mix it up a little bit. We'll go through this one though. Should Christian Rodriguez be more forced to move up to featherweight?
Probably.
Two fights now?
Well, he also blew weight on a contender series too.
Is that okay? Yeah. That's what it was.
Yep. So
his next fight should have to be a featherweight.
Yeah. Yeah. He's made weight successfully once in the UFC. Is that right?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. The JSP fight, he made weight and then got beat. So yeah.
Because that was a featherweight fight.
Also, yeah. That's actually good point, Mike.
Good point. He made weight for that one.
He's made weight for one of these weight classes. Let's go with that one moving forward.
Yeah, because he missed for the Raul Rosas Jr. fight too, which is insane, dude. How do you miss weight for that?
I think anytime you miss weight twice, you should get bumped out of a weight class.
Josh Weems, he did make weight for the Josh Weems fight. He did make weight for that fight.
Like, yeah, 136. I'm willing to give
two in a row, he's best.
Okay. I'm willing to give you one, particularly if it's under regular circumstances. You know, like maybe we could make some we could bend the rules if you're accepting a short notice fight for some reason or another, but if you got this on the book and you miss weight twice, you're just bump up.
Yeah,
might do better. Look at Michelle Pajeda.
Was that a forced move up or did he do it or a little of both?
I would assume that it was more forced, but could be a little of both.
Okay. Yeah.
But when he missed weight for the Wonder Boy, I think they probably were just like, hey, homie, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah, because the fight was scratched. Yeah, completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the problem. When they miss weight and a fight still happens, then they're like,
you talk yourself into it.
Yeah.
Zed Barboza, future Hall of Famer. It's funny because that was mentioned on the broadcast a couple times that it brought up some dialogue in the Slack channels.
Mm-hmm.
Look, there is no MMA Hall of Fame. We're talking UFC Hall of Fame.
UFC Hall of Fame.
Yes. Is Edson Barboza a Hall of Famer? A UFC Hall of Famer?
I think he is.
I do too.
Like third ballot, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's the thing is I understand the trepidation against it. I have always been of the opinion that Hall of Fame should be more inclusive as opposed to exclusive. Because what sort of sanctity are we trying to preserve here? You don't want to let everybody in, but Edson Barboza is a meaningful part of the MMA and UFC experience. He has fought everybody dope. He is responsible for a number of important highlights. I am a big believer that the UFC needs to open up their Hall of Fame outside of doing a fight that they induct, but also doing a knockout and a submission that they induct every year. And by that term, The Terry Etim KO is one of the 12 best KOs in the history of the sport and absolutely merits inclusion, and thus he would. But in general, like, he's just had a bunch of dope fights. His pair of fights with Paul Felder are dope. He's going to probably be sort of all over the UFC record books. You know, maybe not at the top, but he'll be sort of in there for post-fight bonuses, which he already is, like, in there, fights, knockouts, all that stuff. So, yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer. He's not an automatic include, but one of these years you let him in because he was a meaningful part of the experience.
And he's had the toughest strength of schedule in the history of the UFC.
It's right there.
I honestly believe that he has the hardest strength of schedule of anybody in the history of this sport who wasn't a champion. Because you get champions, yeah, and, you know, every champion fight is always impossible, right? Like, because they're always defending the best guy. And even then after, they're still fighting really top dudes. But for a guy who never held a belt, I do not know that anyone can compete with the list of bodies he has fought. Like, it is
insane.
It's tough. And the fact that he's still so freaking durable. Because, like, Yusuf was putting the wood to him, and he still just kind of battled through, and he's still here despite getting his ass kicked for 13 years by some of the best guys in the world.
And becoming equally as durable at a lower weight class when he was always already shredded at 55. So, I hope he's a Hall of Famer. And I was thinking,
shouts to Gino the Nose, who called Barbosa the Craig Biggio,
the
Craig Biggio level Hall of Famer. I'm like, you know what? Kind of works.
I like baseball works. Analogies, baby. Yeah, the baseball BJ, analogies. Baby. These cage aggression fights are like starting and ending so quickly. We've already We've already gone to another fight, and we already have a knockout.
I'm shocked, given these matchups. Jesus.
That Barbosa Etim knockout, is that the oldest highlight clip that we continually see in the UFC rotation?
It's tough for me to say because I don't watch the highlight intros anymore. I'm just doing stuff, but
because every time I see like non-Reebok, non-Venom type of highlights, it always kind of pops now. It sticks out, and they're getting very rare. And
it's probably Chuck Liddell, like a Chuck Liddell highlight.
No, active fighter, like they're
active fighter. There aren't that many active fighters who have a KO that's 12 years old. 11. Sorry, I just looked.
Or just like that in general.
Yeah, and they run it, and they run it like it happened yesterday. You know, that's what I mean. Yeah. So I just think that's really, really interesting,
dude. Yeah. When he did it again, I was losing my mind. I was like, "Oh my god, he's gonna have another wheel kick. He's gonna be the first guy with two of them."
I thought Herb was definitely gonna stop it, and
if
then
he tried to punch him instead of going for the choke.
I couldn't believe he did that.
An unnamed member of the MMA fighting. An unnamed member of the MMA fighting team was slacking me and was like, "Why the hell does he hate me? Why is he going for this choke? Does he know I have this KO ticket? I can't believe I'm about to lose this bet."
It wasn't me. It wasn't me.
It wasn't you. It wasn't you. It was another member.
I did also hold – I was actually holding the same ticket as well. But very smartly, after like halfway through round two, I hedged on Barboza live.
Live bets are
so
big.
So it all worked out. It all worked out. I lost a lot of bets, but I emptied the clip on Dylan Danis, Logan
Best
Paul
of the weekend.
Actually happens. I literally bet every – and look, I'm not betting like lots of money here. Like a unit to me is like $2. This is like the biggest combat sports bet I ever made. I unlocked like whatever dollar amount I had left over – just for the year ever bet. Like there would have been no more watch party bets if that fight got canceled. But I went in and put it all on the fight happens. And when that first bell rang and they started walking towards each other, I was like, I don't care what happens the rest of the night. It's a profitable night.
And it was a terrific bet. I followed
and if
you
could have found, if you could have found the DQ bet somewhere, you would have paid off your mortgage.
Yeah. I told you in the previous show, I'm like, if I could find a DQ prop,
a DQ prop.
And I said on the preview show too. That's what I would bet on if I could.
And that was the official conclusion, right? Was DQ, correct? It wasn't the
DQ. So anybody who had Logan Paul by decision got boned by Dylan Danis.
Which they deserve. That's what Dylan Danis does.
Yeah. Yep.
Comeback of the year.
Ooh, main event.
As far as it gotta be the main event that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I am not Jose in my ability to just like recall these things off the cuff. So give me a second to.
I know we're like forgetting a big one.
Do we have a category for that in our yearly stuff? We do.
We do.
But there's you wrote it down here.
But we didn't add
anything. There's nothing under it. Nothing's been added under this.
Yeah.
Comeback of the year. If we're talking specifically in fight, it's definitely up there.
Yeah, it's up there.
I'm trying to just look through main events and see if something is jumping out at me from this year that was like a super big comeback.
Our listeners and our viewers are very good at this.
Yeah.
Oliveira beating Dariush is kind of was a pretty
good comeback. It's not comeback. Well, maybe it depends on your thing, but I would argue pretty strongly that Israel Adesanya, Alex Pereira 2 is comeback of the year. I thought Pereira was beating him.
Yeah, but like, first round was like, I mean, there was an exchange there where like, oh, maybe Izzy might be wobbling a little bit, but I don't know. It's tough.
It's not as clear, but I would vote that. Looking through, Strickland Abus is an argument there. Looking through. Whew. Nothing that looks as dominant as this.
Yeah, no one's really throwing anything out in the comment section that we're forgetting either. So it might be.
I can't.
Maybe it is.
I'd have to look a lot more because none of the main events are jumping out to me as majors in that regard.
I mean, he came back from a 10-7. 10-7 from a beating.
Yeah, it's a big comeback. Yeah, I'm tentatively willing to give this at the moment until more research.
All right.
Good call, Super Dave.
Good job.
Let's go back to Mr. Boza.
Does Pereira have a career resurgence now at middleweight? Won 6 in a row, didn't break sweat, need 666. Well, I mean, I think we're a little...
I don't know that his career's resurging. Like you said in this question, he won 5 in a row before this. He was doing fine. He was a ranked welterweight. He was doing fine. I think he's just going to keep doing fine.
I think we might see him fight more now because he doesn't have this massive weight cut. So maybe this is going to – he just might be more active. How old is Michel Pereira? He's
like 30-something, I think. Let me check.
He's past 35?
He's 30. He just turned 30.
Oh, he's just 30. Okay, he's got years.
I thought he was – he's only 30?
Just turned 30 October 6th, according to Wikipedia. You know, how true that is or not.
That's pretty stunning. I thought he was older. I thought he was like 36 or something.
I have questions about his long-term viability at middleweight. I think it probably is a better weight class for him, but at this exact moment in time, welterweight is sort of in this weird flux period where he could have maybe made more hay and moved up the rankings against some older dudes, whereas middleweight has kind of a lot of guys who are on the come up, and I want to see him, you know, match physicalities with people, right? But like, you know, the heaters at middleweight are coming, and I don't know that Michel Pereira is holding up to Joe Pyfer, to Bo Nickel, you know, to those guys. So I think he'll be a top 15-ish guy.
Dude, I have the fight. Paul Craig tomorrow.
Fight. You nailed
it's it. It's not I, fight. It's not.
I accept that's not it.
No, I'm saying that is a fight that is going to happen. It's not happening next. It's not happening next because I have the right fight and I will announce it tomorrow.
I'm excited for Otto tomorrow. Then.
Oh yeah, you got to give it to the guy that nobody believed in a year ago, except for me,
Alexander Volkanovski. you friggin' walked right into that one. Walked right into that one, baby.
That's very funny. Very funny. Do you have anything more? Do you have anything else?
I'm not ending on anything better than that.
Yeah.
We talked about
Jonathan Martinez. Yeah, we're all high on him. I got a couple.
That dude is a freaking problem, man.
I like it. You know what? I think we're good, gentlemen.
I think, we need to take like another shower. I got to take another shower before I
watch. Also, this Cage's aggression thing has got to be coming to an end soon, right?
We've had like, since we started, like the post-fight show's only been going on for like 23 minutes maybe. We've had like 9 fights on this card already.
I still straight up do not know who that old man was, because he does not appear to be in this list of fights from this event.
He'll be fighting later tonight again.
Another fight's happening. When is this main event going to start? I feel like I'm going to be up to like
2. I thought it was like 11.
I think it's like 11 Central. So yeah, we could have like
another hour. Wait a second. Brandon Mills? That kind of looks like who you were. This is impossible. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Right, I
had a great time, guys. What a night of combat sports.
What a day.
And it's not over yet. Caged aggression. Go to your pay-per-view provider to spend $50.
It's Josh. We're getting Josh Clark versus Bryn Heathcott.
So this is the fight right before the co-main event, per Tapology. Yes.
And then we're getting Jordan Clark. Another Clark. Back-to-back Clarks. Could be a gimmick parlay.
Isn't Matt Hughes' son supposed to be fighting on this card?
Brandon Mills. He's in the co-main event.
I did not realize Matt Hughes' son was not named Hughes. Okay, that's why I was struggling there. Got it.
Yep. All right, so we're almost there, everybody. And I believe it's like $47 to order this paper.
What?
Stick to MMA specific number.
That's what I was told. Yeah. Stick to MMAFighting.com. We'll let you know what happens.
We have a live blog and a recap. I think you'll be covered with those. Please save
AKN, I'll see you tomorrow. AKN, I'll see you tomorrow and on to the next one. Guys, it's UFC 294 Fight Week. Very soon. Good night, everybody.
Love y'all.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.